And before we begin, I'm going to set aside, God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the book, the steps, recovery, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. God, help me carry your message tonight. Amen. Saturday marked the beginning of 12 years. I put together a special handout of all the really good pictures or graphics or whatever that I'd given out through the years. Patty's going to do a PDF on it. It'll be out on the site probably this weekend. I can't express what it's meant for me to be able to do these meetings. I don't take any credit. I give it all to God. The only thing I know I've done is I've really done my best to be prepared and make sure that I'm trying to carry the message. Patty said that probably she's the only person who knows what the commitment that I made to this. And I'm not saying this to brag or anything, but it shows what God can do for you. Because who would have thought that I would be doing this? And on Sunday night, we read about Jim. And this Sunday, we're going to read about the Jaywalker and Fred. If you're new, we're reading the chapter more about alcoholism, which was written so that when you read this, you understand, if you're capable of being honest, that you are in deep trouble without God and working these steps. And I can't forget that ever. And the words are so powerful, so if you could join us Sunday night. Saturday, we finished up the step 11. We're going to start reading Working with Others. If you're new, you say, well, I'm not ready for step Working with Others. That chapter is full of spiritual information, of information that's really vital for me to understand. It shows how they worked with people, how someone might work with you, what the whole deal is all about. So if you can join us for Working with Others. When we finish more about alcoholism, we're going to do step one from the steps we took, and then we'll go on to We Agnostics. When we finish step five, which we're working on now, I'm not sure what we're going to do. I think we're going to read from either steps we took or carry this message on step five. Then for those who haven't been to the meetings before, when we go to step six and seven, these are the steps that changed and not talked about much at meetings. We spend quite a bit of time on it. How do we change? How do we change from our personality of self-will to being the person God created all the time? And we're going to read the book Drop the Rock and some other information. So the other thing I was thinking about, if you're new, and you're new and you get on the site, go to the How It Works preamble. It's a tag at the bottom of the episodes. And listen to the How It Works, what we read tonight. I do three meetings on it. Listen to it, see if it helps. It puts this in perspective. And so it certainly helped me. Tonight we are on page, let me get it right, we are on page 72, and we talked 2 weeks ago about the results of the fourth step and the fourth step promises. Then last week we looked at the first two pages, which tells us what we're trying to do in step four and that we what we do about it in step five. And I'm going to read this top paragraph again. I'm going to start with the bottom line. Almost inevitably, they got drunk. These are people who didn't want to do step five. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. Now, the house cleaning we're talking about in AA is not cleaning your house, it's cleaning your mind. And it's cleaning your mind of everything that you thought your whole life, and a lot of it was wrong. And you're full of all these what we call old ideas that aren't true, and you've acted on them, and if you have, it didn't go well. It got me a wristband. It got me down on my knees at 2:30 in the afternoon saying, I'm done, I can't go on like this anymore. It says they took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock, so they weren't completely honest. They only thought, notice thought in italics, and when an alcoholic thinks, it's a dangerous thing. Remember, your problem centers in your mind, and your problem is S-H-I-T, simply how I think. And so they only thought they lost their egoism and fear, and egoism is an excessive concern for yourself with exaggerated feelings of self-importance. Am I the only one in the room that had that? And we have an excessive amount of it. And fear, we all know what fear is. They only thought they had humbled themselves, humbled, to completely submit yourself that you're powerless without God. They had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. So we have to learn by doing this. What we learn is the process. We become humble, we become fearless, and we become honest. Now, this life story has confused people. It's not where you went to school, how many times you were married, how many kids you had, whether you played baseball or not. And it says all their life story. The story is your life as you saw it in your mind, as you lived it, and you saw it wrong, because it's a story. It's not even true. It's not true, it's fiction. And the story they're talking about is your resentments, your fears, your conduct, your shame and guilt, the harms you did to others. And you have to see it to understand if it's true or not. You can't see it on your own. You know why? Because you lived your whole life believing it. Now, new people come in here, they have a million reasons why they got here. It's never them, it's always somebody else. And they're full of fear, and they have these stories that they've told themselves. And we have to tell these stories because we don't want to act on them anymore. We don't want to believe them. And I had a lot of stories in my head, and over time, I've seen the truth about them. You're not going to see it all at once. So what your story is, what you wrote in your step four, your resentments, why you had them, what was threatened, what was your mistakes, what was your conduct. In fear, why did you have fears? What were you trying to manage? How your fears dominated your life. And then your sex conduct, your relationships, how you harmed others in both sex and other relationships, and whom did you hurt? Who did you hurt in your life? And if you tell about everybody you hurt in your life, you're gonna be pretty honest. And if you can see how you hurt them, and you couldn't see it, so you're gonna tell this story, and your story changes over time. People that you used to just dislike was too kind. You can see them differently now. You can see them as who they are. You don't have that negative feeling. You see them differently. You see things that you did. You see yourself differently. So I hope that helps. It says more than most people, because Charlie said he wrote a 200 pages of his life. And he said, I made some poor son of a gun read the whole damn thing. And he says it didn't change him at all. It's how we perceive things and how we see it, and then we have someone else look at it with us, so they can help change the way we see it. God and another human being. And when you tell it to another human being, God works through people. And so you're able to see things differently. And that's how you get free. Because we're going to look at the fifth step promises on page 75, and you'll see how freeing this is. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. Anybody believe that? We want everybody to think we're okay. We want to protect our image at all costs. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. Now, I was listening to scripture, and they were talking about praying. And the guy, and they were talking about the Lord's Prayer, actually. And before it, he talks about the Pharisees and this and that. He says, hypocrisy produces anxiety. Now think about that. If I, in my own self, if I know I'm hypocritical, it gives me guilt. It makes me anxious. Think about it. And in AA, we want to get rid of this hypocrisy so we're not anxious. And that's how we would call shame and guilt. And we let go of the things that we're holding on to. We reveal them to somebody else, and it sets us free. We want to enjoy a certain reputation, right? But we know in our heart we don't deserve it. So now, when you feel good about yourself, you want to feel good about yourself because of how you're serving God and others, and not necessarily as other people see you, although you want people to like you and see you well. Then we read some of this last week, and I want to go on to the bottom of the page. It says we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. And some people you can only tell certain things to. You may have to be selective. You may have to tell some things you did to one person and some to another person for a variety of reasons. Because remember, you don't want to do more harm in doing so. And some people have legal issues or other things. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. Now, why are they writing it like this? Because in 1939, there was no AA. There were three meetings, and they were going to send this big book out to the world, and they were going to have everybody read this and want to do it. So they're telling you, who do you find? Now you can find people in the meetings, preferably someone who's done it, and you can share with them. And you have to feel comfortable with the person. You have to feel that they're going to trust you. You trust them completely. A lot of people are afraid to tell people all their crap, you know. Because it's your crap, you know. But after you listen to a lot of Fifth Steps, you can't remember whose crap was whose. And it's all the same crap. You know what I mean? We all did the same thing. And we weren't bad people. I always thought I was a bad person. But I realized, been doing this, that I just had the wrong manager, me. That it wasn't, if I had had God managing my life, I wouldn't have done these things. And I didn't know that it was wrong for me to manage the world. Why? I don't know about you, but it's a powerful line in the big book. It was very true of me. I was under a delusion that I can wrest happiness and satisfaction by managing well. So I lived my whole life under this delusion, which is not good. It means you're seeing something that's not true. You're living on a lie. And I just wanted to be happy. And I tried the best I could, and I made a mess of it. Why? Because I didn't know what I needed to be happy. And I could never find happiness out there. If you're new, you're not going to find happiness out there. You have to find it in here. And then you're going to be happy in here no matter what happens out there. It's hard to explain. You can lose a son, and you're not happy about it, but you can be okay with it. You can deal with it. You can deal with things. Because you have God now. Those belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must, of course, will want to go to the properly appointed authority whose duty is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained by an established religion. They're used to hearing people talk and tell their secrets. They're trustworthy. We often find such a person quick to see and understand our problem. Now, Father Bill W. is one of my favorite speakers. He's dead now. He gave a talk in 1981. It's on XA speakers. If you can listen to this, it's the most powerful, especially the last 25 minutes. So he's lived his whole life trying to find God. He went to the Vatican. He was with Pope John Paul back in the days. He had a PhD in theology, but he was an alcoholic. And he made a mess of his life. So he ends up in on the beach in Mexico, babysitting, getting drunk, falling in the water. So he says he has to do something. So he tries to find someone to confess to. He was going to go to a priest, try to find a priest in Los Angeles that he doesn't know, because he was in Los Angeles, that he's going to confess to. So he goes to the priest. And he confesses this long saga of all the terrible things he did in his life. And the priest says to him, well, you know, you're just an alcoholic. That's your problem. You're just an alcoholic. And nobody had seen that before. And when he said that, and the priest was an alcoholic too. And he said, how come you found the only alcoholic priest in LA to confess to? You see how God works? But I think what they're talking here, because most people didn't understand alcoholism in 1939, but when I say they could see and understand my problem, I wrote my separation from God, my self-centeredness, my trying to run the show. And then that led to all the other stuff. If we cannot or would not rather do this, we search our acquaintance for a closed-mouthed, understanding friend. Perhaps our doctor or psychologist will be the person. It may be one of your own family. Now, we're lucky now because we have people who are alcoholics who've done this, who studied the book, and we have people we can talk to who understand us. And they have their own story and they have their experience. I've done more four-step work by doing fifth steps with people than I did when I did my four-step, because I see things that I did all the time, my thinking, my actions. Don't do it with your wife. It says, do not disclose anything to your wives or your parents which will hurt them and make them unhappy. Now here's a key line that I have to remember. We have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense. And isn't that how we lived? Isn't that what our resentments are about? Blaming others for what we did? Such parts of our story we tell to someone who will be understand but yet be unaffected. And then I love this. I call this maybe the golden rule of AA. We must be hard on ourselves, but always consider of others. Love your neighbors yourself. As you wish others to do unto you, do unto them. We can be hard on ourselves, but always be considerate of others. Notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, and maybe one is so situated there's no suitable person available. If that is so, the step may be postponed, only, however, if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through with it at the first opportunity. I don't think that applies anymore. We say this because we are very anxious that we talk to the right person. Is it important that he be able to keep a confidence that he fully understand and prove what we are driving at? That he will not try to change our plan. Now, there are a lot of ways for going over these fourth and fifth steps in the big book. You can do the first three, I do the first three columns with someone, and then we read the book, and it says, we look at it at a different angle, and then we say the prayers, and we say the prayers for everybody, and then they do the fourth column, and then we go over that. And then we do fears, and then we do the questions on the sex relationships. And while you're doing that, you write down whoever you harmed and you circle whoever you owe an amends to. So it's a process. You do it any way you want, but as long as you cover that information, you get the job done. And then, of course, your character defects that are on this card, they come up over and over and over again. And I don't have to be selfish, dishonest, frightening, considerate, prideful, greedy, lusty, angry anymore, impatient, tired, unless I want to. I have the freedom now to see it and say, I don't want to be this way. And I change. Now, sometimes I don't do it right away. Sometimes I have to call Mark. And he says, get on the right-hand side. Get off the left-hand. My wife's good at that, too. She says, you're on the left-hand side, honey. Get to the right-hand side. Now, it's good. She could tell me that, but I can't tell her that. I don't know if you understand that. But we can see it. And people who love us can see it very quickly. You know, they can see because they know what we're trying to do. They know we want to be the people God made. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory. That's what you have, and that's what you're going to discuss. It can't be an inventory in your mind. Why? Because your mind's where your problem is, and you can't see the truth. And you have to write it down so you can't take it back. It has to be written. Now, it doesn't say whether it's ink or pencil or what kind of paper. And I don't know about computer, if you can do it on a tablet or computer. They didn't have it in those days. But it has to be written down. I think it's preferable if you write it down in ink, so you can't change it. And it's there, and you can look at it, because God will help you put the stuff down that you need to be rid of if you ask Him and you're in prayer. We explain to our partner what we're about to do and why we have to do it. He shall realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. And if you notice everything, you know, there's so much on page, on four step. We spent, what, probably eight to 10 weeks on it. And the information, the fifth step, really parallels that. It just tells you how you're going to put that all together, how you're going to use that. And why do we have to do it? Because I have to be free. I have to be free of the bondage of self. I don't want to be angry anymore. I don't want to be afraid, and I don't want to harm any more people. Anybody have shame and guilt? If you have shame and guilt, which we all have, the best way to get rid of it is to do your fourth and fifth step. It just goes. Once you get it out on paper and you tell people about it, it doesn't have as much power over you. And then when you realize you wouldn't do it today, you wouldn't have done it today, and then you could see how your self-centeredness caused you to do it, and your motives were not good, even though you thought they were, and you can see, and especially when you look back on your relationships, how selfish, at least I was selfish in my relationships, I used people. I didn't even realize it. I always had a good reason for everything I did. Anybody else do that? Yeah. They don't make any sense when you actually look back now. And in fact, now I can't even say, why did I do some of those things? It doesn't make any sense. But I knew at the time I was either afraid, usually afraid, and I made decisions out of fear, wanting approval, wanting people to like me. Most people approaching this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. So here's what you do. And there's 8 fifth step promises. I don't think they're read at a single meeting, but they're powerful. We pocket our pride and go to it. Now remember, pride is the thing that blocks me from God. You don't have to turn to it, but in Dr. Bob's nightmare, where Dr. Bob, our founder, a powerfully spiritual, wonderful human being, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Dr. Bob. At the end of his story, he says, if you think you're an atheist, agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. Now think about it. There are people who don't want to do this. It's their intellectual pride, and pride and fear go together. And he says, if you still think you're strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But listen to this, but if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you, and look what they say, it never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you've been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink. And here's how Dr. Bob ends his story, and you can listen to it, I've covered this on the podcast. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. That is a absolute guarantee. God has done things for me in sobriety I could never have done for myself. Will never let me down. So you pocket your pride. Now, how do you pocket your pride? You do your four step. You do the work. You follow the directions. You meet with someone. You talk. You go over it. I think pride is what keeps people from doing the steps. They're afraid. Because remember, there's a coin every alcoholic carries in his pocket. I don't know if any of you still have it. If you do, throw it away. On one side it says pride, on the other side it says fear. We're so afraid that we're proud, and we rely on ourselves. And so that's from the 12 and 12. Ruinous coin, that it ruined our lives. So we want to pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist the character Dark cranny of the past. Now don't worry, you're not going to remember everything and you're not going to tell them everything. It's not the first, it's not going to be on CNN. It's not going to be graded. It's the idea you're doing the best you can, because more will be revealed. I can see things now that I did that I couldn't see when I did the, you know, 18 years ago. And things change, but do the best you can and ask God to help you. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted That's a great promise. You feel good. Two, you can look the world in the eye. Think about that. Now, how does that happen? Because what you can do is you've forgiven everybody you were angry at, and you're willing to make amends to everybody you harmed. So you're not afraid of anybody that walks through the door. I say that, I do believe it. There's probably somebody that I would be afraid to see that I don't know about right now, but in general, I'm not afraid. I'd like to make amends to a lot of people, but you know, it's not appropriate to, at some point now, 40 years later, but if they came through the door, I'd be willing to do it. I remember the things, they probably don't remember it. But you're not afraid of people. Now, what's that promise that's read at ninth step promise? It says, we lose our fear of economic insecurity and people. We're not afraid of people anymore. Now, I was afraid of people. Anybody have an office when they before they came in here and a door? And when anybody came to it, they were afraid? Anybody relate to that? It's always going to be bad. What do they want now? Anybody afraid of the mail? Telephones? People? Why were we afraid of people? Well, because we had harmed them and we had negative feelings towards them. You can look the world in the eye. Now, losing fear of economic insecurity, somebody thought that you get money. Now, you don't get money in AA. Because Sandy Beach was very upset because he needed a job, he didn't have any money, and he kept saying, when am I going to get the money? And they kept saying, say the serenity prayer. And we don't get, we lose our fear of economic insecurity because we have God. And then we have God give us the right thoughts and actions to do the things we need to do to get economic security. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Is that a great promise? Because when I was alone, I was never at peace and ease. I was always uneasy before I came in here. Now I feel okay a lot. Just feel okay. It's so wonderful. In fact, the best feeling I can ever have is just being okay. I don't know about you. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. They just fall away. Because we say our fear prayer, God, remove my fear, direct my attention to how I should be. And we lose our fear of people. And we're willing to make amends, and we can see the truth. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. You're starting, this is the beginning of the relationship with God that we need to be able to live. We said we have to have a power to live. How does it work? Well, here we're beginning to feel the nearness of our Creator. Why? I've said prayers so that I wouldn't be angry, and I've been able to forgive people and not be angry at them. I have my fear prayers, and I've had prayers in my relationships, and I've seen things differently. You learn you can go to God. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. We're beginning to experience a power outside of ourselves that changes the way we see the world. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. It just goes. We're not obsessed with drinking anymore. And here's the greatest one. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. We're not alone anymore. I was alone my whole life. I always felt alone, always wanted approval, but now I don't have to worry about that. I'm walking hand in hand with God. It says we walk on page 100, we walk hand in hand with the new man in the path of spiritual progress. That's what it's all about. So I'm gonna stop there. And then next week, I'm going to finish up with the following paragraph. And then we'll look at 6 and 7 in the book. And then we'll look at that in detail with some other information. I hope this was helpful. Thank you.